The May 13th Senate Finance Committee will come to order. We have one bill on the agenda, Senate File 4780, Senator Fateh. Welcome to the committee.
Go ahead. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to fast forward through the historical context. I think everyone knows pretty much what's been going on around this piece of legislation. I'm going to focus on the fiscal cost for DLI. This is going to have an appropriation so that DLI can have the enforcement authority paid for, covered for, over the pay transparency and minimum compensation requirements on the bill. DLI indicated that they anticipate costs as related to increased complaints from the bill, as well as costs related to outreach and education over the standards of the bill as well. So I'll leave it at that. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Olufsen, you want to go through the fiscal notes or deal with the amendment first? Want to do the amendment first? Okay. Senator Friends moves A32 amendment, page 16, line 11. Is that should be in everybody's packets?
Mr. Chair, I can move this along quickly if that's helpful.
Please do.
So the language in the bill just isn't in the proper form for setting the base for the appropriation to the Department of Labor and Industry, and this just deletes the existing language and replaces it with some base setting language that's a little bit more, that members are more used to seeing.
So any discussion on that amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Olufsen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Eric Olufsen, Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Labor Committee. In your packets, you should have a consolidated fiscal note for Senate File 4780. This was to the Delete Everything Amendment in Judiciary Public Safety that was adopted last week. There were some additional technical clarifying amendments that were also made, but this still embodies the costs in the bill before you in the third engrossment for Senate File 4780. So on the front page of the fiscal note, you'll see there's an estimated fiscal impact of $424,000 in fiscal year 25, and then a combined amount of $716,000 in 26-27. This is to the Department of Human Rights and Department of Labor and Industry, and all of these costs come from the estimated costs come from the general fund. Moving on to page 3 of the fiscal note, you'll see it's this is for the Department of Labor and Industry. It's $173,000 in fiscal year 25, and then $123,000 ongoing beginning in fiscal year 26. To get to those amounts, you'll have to go to page 6 of the fiscal note. There are approximately 12,000 transportation network company or TNC drivers in Minnesota. So they assume 480 hours of work to receive and resolve notice and other documentation related complaints from TNC drivers. An additional 1,440 hours each year to receive and resolve compensation related complaints from TNC drivers, and then 100 hours each year for outreach and education. So that gets you to approximately one FTE, and they also assume one-time costs of $50,000 in fiscal year 25 for outreach and education. So on page 7, that just summarizes all those costs, and that matches the general fund costs that I already mentioned. Moving on to the Attorney General on page 9, they do not project any defined expenditures, absorbed costs, or revenues from the bill. For the Commerce Department, they also, on page 12, they do not assume any additional costs or expenditures since the provisions in this bill would not have any direct impact on the work of the Commerce Department. Moving on to the Department of Human Rights, this begins on page 13. There's a cost of $251,000, estimated cost of $251,000 from the general fund in FY25, and then $235,000 ongoing beginning in fiscal year 26. They come to this assumption assuming 50 new cases annually based on the bill language. The department would hire one new FTE investigator and then a half FTE associate general counsel and a half FTE administrative support to get to these. And there would be some additional one-time costs for office space, equipment, furniture, and assorted supplies is what the Department of Human Rights is estimating based off the bill language. And that's how you get to the $251,000 in FY25 and then $235,000 ongoing beginning in fiscal year 26. And then the Supreme Court assumes is not anticipated to have a significant fiscal impact based off the bill language before you. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that summarizes my walkthrough of the fiscal note.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee on the fiscal note? Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was wondering if we had somebody from the Department of Labor that could talk to the fiscal note.
Commissioner? Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nicole Blissenbach. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate you being here today. I'm just kind of curious on the assumptions for your section of the fiscal note. You're expecting required notices and other documentation complaints to go up 142 times what you saw in 2023, and minimum compensation complaints for drivers to go up 52 times what you saw in 2023. And the fiscal note represents sections 3 and 4 of the bill, but can you tell me why you're expecting such huge increases?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, so the part of the reason why we are assuming what we assume in this fiscal note is this is an area that we currently do not regulate. So this bill would create, DLI in this bill would have authority to enforce two provisions, the pay transparency provisions, which dictate what needs to be provided to drivers when they receive a trip offer. After each ride, they get a ride summary. Weekly, they get a weekly, a week-long summary. So that piece is the pay transparency, kind of the notice type. Then there's the minimum compensation. Again, that's new. That's new regulation. So we assume, based on looking at the types of numbers we get on similar type regulations that we have, which we looked at wage notices, and looked there to kind of guide us in our assumptions. Because this is new, because this is an area where there hasn't been groundwork laid, and that we will need to be doing education and outreach, that is why we made the assumptions that we made for the number of calls and complaints and inquiries coming into the department on those two areas of enforcement.
Senator Pratt, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Blissenbach. So if I just do simple math, right, you're expecting this to go from just a little over 1/100th of a percent up to 2 percentage points, 142 times. That would mean you expect complaints on insufficient notice to increase from 426 to 60,500. Does that sound about right? 426 times 142?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think in our assumptions, we stated that there are assumed to be about 12,000 drivers currently in the state, and we're taking a percentage of that 12,000 that would be calling into the department either related to pay transparency or minimum compensation. So it is a percentage of that population that we would expect to receive inquiries from.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you say 0.014% of the total worker population. You're not talking the driver population, you're talking all Minnesota workers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I apologize. I don't have the fiscal note in front of me, but I believe what we looked at the comparison of the entire workforce population to look at the percentage that we currently get for notices, and then we took that percentage, increased it, and we're taking that in comparison to the driver population, which we assume to be about 12,000. If we had assumed 60,000 complaints, we would have been asking for much more than the point, I think 0.97 that we, for FTE that we're asking for.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the entire state, every working Minnesotan, you received 426 complaints. And it seems like what I didn't pick up in the documentation was a change in the basis of where the rates being pulled from. So how many claims did you receive from TNC drivers, and what would you expect to receive after this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, we have received no complaints from TNC drivers because we currently do not have any enforcement over pay transparency, because it does that is in the bill, but it is not currently in effect. So this would be a new area of regulation, and we're drawing comparisons to the wage theft notice and how many complaints we get there, but it is a comparison. It is not it's not entirely the same. This is new regulation.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Commissioner Blisenbach, I'm just curious why you would expect the rate for TNC drivers to be 142% the times the rate that we see from all Minnesota working people.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think I covered that, but the main reasoning is because this is new. Whenever we have a new area of regulation for the department, we see far more inquiries and far more complaints. Because people are trying to get their bearings. You know, what am I, I'm receiving this from the company I work for. Does it meet the requirements in the law? We then review it. Sometimes it takes an hour. Sometimes it takes more than that. So what we've assumed, I believe, in this fiscal note is that most of these would be inquiries that we could handle on an inform and educate basis. That's hence only the 0.97 FTE. Reflected in the fiscal.
Senator Pratt, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner Blisenbach, why aren't we seeing, if what you're saying is true and we see a spike in complaints when the new law is impacted, why don't we see that moderating and normalizing down to what we see across the entire population?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, it would. The further out we go into the future, I believe there would be. But it's not reflected in this fiscal note because this only looks to 2028.
Further discussion? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if there's somebody from the Department of Human Rights here.
Anybody here from Human Rights? And Senator Pratt, I was kind of wondering about their thing because I thought, I'm not sure why they would have this kind of, it seems like this is something they would have complaints from this already, unlike Dolly. But I'm not sure why they would have new stuff from this bill. But go ahead, Senator Pratt. If there's nobody here from there, but you can ask the author or.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Fateh. I actually have the same thought that Senator Marty had. I can't understand why we would see an increase in complaints with the Department of Human Rights and why those complaints wouldn't be satisfied through the Department of Labor's investigation.
Thank you. Senator Fateh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I missed the second part of your question. I apologize, Senator Pratt. Can you repeat that second part?
It looks, Senator Pratt, like they're not funding the Department of Human Rights, so they must have.
Yeah, so the working group that when we discussed this, we were aiming towards, I'm sorry, thank you,
Go
Mr.
Ahead.
Chair. We're aiming towards funding DLI for the enforcement piece. not so much the Department of Human Rights piece. So our goal was going to be 173,000 initial cost for DLI, and then 123,000 ongoing.
And you're not funding anything from Human Rights?
That's correct.
So the assumption that I and Senator Pratt were sort of making is that the same one, that may be the correct assumption, that you did not feel and the committee did not feel that was a legitimate cost, that would be
no.
A new cost for them.
Correct.
Okay. That came from the appropriation was put in by Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. The decision on how much to fund?
Prior to Judiciary and Public Safety,
yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Prior
you.
To that.
Further discussion, Senator Pratt.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, and maybe you, let me just make sure I understand. So it was the Judiciary Committee that decided not to fund the fiscal cost request of the Department of Human Rights.
It's, Senator Pratt, I'm just saying that's what I was guessing because it's not in the bill. So I'm assuming it's the
I'm
same.
I'm just curious if they actually made that decision.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that second.
I don't know who did. I just say this is the bill we have in front of us. It does not fund it, and I would question why funding it myself, but not to be picking on the Department of Human Rights, but. So, Mr. Nauman, do you have more insight?
I'm maybe a little. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the bill did not have the Department of Human Rights appropriation, but did have the DALI appropriation when it came to the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. I think that's right.
Correct.
So it preceded the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee.
Okay.
I'm getting a nod from Mr. Olofsson, who's
okay.
been tracking this bill.
Okay. Further discussion? Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm kind of curious about that because the fiscal note is based, is dated 5/10, and it went through, the committee report from Judiciary came through at 4/18. Do we know when that section of the human rights was completed? It looks like it was on 5/10 with everybody else.
Mr. Nauman or Mr. Olofsson, do you know? Oh, here it uses. FBO.
That's when the LBO signed off.
Yeah. Mr. Turner is here too. Mr. Turner, if you want to come to the table, you're welcome as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Do you have any insight on the appropriation or lack of appropriation to the Department of Human Rights?
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't have any information on when the appropriation to the Department of Human Rights was dropped. This bill's gone through a couple iterations. I do, however, know that there was discussion, not on the record, but discussion among staff and the chair that in the 2023 legislature appropriated for an increase to the Department of Human Rights for general enforcement of $1.5 million in 24 and 25 with tails of $2 million in 26 and 27. And that was that came to an equivalent of 12 FTEs. Now this bill estimates in new activity 200,000 a year roughly with two FTEs. And it was considered that the increase last year to the Department of Human Rights could certainly absorb that activity.
So, Mr. Chair, just to answer Senator Pratt's question, the first time the agency, there have been a number of fiscal notes on this because as the bill evolved, there were additional requests. based on a quick tracking, and I may not have this entirely correct, but it looks like the Department of Human Rights signed off on the first time on the fiscal note on April 29th. And then the version that you have in front of you, they signed off on May 8th.
And
Senator Pratt,
and that's when I see the first fiscal note, but it went through judiciary 10 days earlier.
So Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, there wasn't a question, that was a statement, but I will offer that on a number of occasions the bills, as you know, bills evolve, and the fiscal note takes a little bit more time sometimes than the legislative process or fiscal notes do. So sometimes the fiscal note is chasing the tail of the legislation a little bit, and then we're only catching up to the bill itself today with the fiscal note.
And the bill was heard in judiciary on May 9th, it says.
So, Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I see that the bill was reported back as recommend to pass on April 18th. And then it went through the Rules Committee and then ended up in Finance on May 9th, but not directly from the Judiciary Committee.
Okay. And I was hearing that it was the 9th, but that, you're right, that may be come from Rules at that time. In any case, I think Mr. Turner's statement about how much was given to them last year. I don't know if people think we need to cover that. That's another issue, but I kind of think that it looks like most of what's in here, I think if we just gave them $2 million last year, I think that should be enough to cover it, but they obviously disagree. The department obviously said they wanted more. Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and if I might just ask Mr. Nauman, if we don't fund this, this go-around, will this be built into the forecast, or will it show as a fiscal cost if the Department of Human Rights comes back and asks for money specifically for this enforcement?
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, this is a direct appropriation. It would be a direct appropriation, so it would not be shown in the forecast. To your first question. The second question is a little bit more nuanced. If the agency discovered that their costs after the effective date of the bill approached the level that they are projecting in the fiscal note, then it's very possible that going through the governor's budget request process and may produce this as an informing logic for an increase in the future. I can't speak to that, and you know, the agency is making projections about the number of investigations that they will have to do. Time will tell whether that's the case. At this point, the assumption is that the agency has been provided sufficient resources to operate this biennium, and it's up to the committee whether it wishes to add those resources or do something different.
Further discussion? If not,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Pratt.
You know, we've talked about how many iterations this has gone through, and Senator Fattah gave, you know, just a cursory overview. I was wondering if you could go a little bit more into the meat of the bill so I can understand exactly where we're talking, sure. What we're talking about.
Go ahead, Senator Fattah.
So you want the historical context or just the meat or how things were decided upon?
How things were decided on and what we're looking at today as far as what the proposal is.
Awesome. So I'll start with section one. So for the insurance coverage phases, so there's three levels. P1 is when the driver is logged on onto the app but not on the trip itself. P2 is when the driver accepts a ride request but is en route to pick up the passenger, and P3 is when the driver is transporting the passenger. For the insurance provisions, there's primary liability coverage in P1 of at least $50,000 per person, $100,000 per accident for bodily injury, and it also requires the uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage and personal injury protection. While in P2, again, meaning when the driver accepted a ride request and is going to the driver or going to the rider, there's personal liability coverage of at least $1.5 million for death, injury, or property damage. And then there's additional coverage during P2 and P3 that the TNCs must provide additional insurance to cover the injuries not covered by other policies up to $1 million. There's also minimum compensation that has yet to be worked out. We reached a compromise among the stakeholders outside of the TNCs. For Section 3, there's notice and pay transparency language that for drivers gets them clear and advance notice of their pay. There's multilingual support provisions. There's a language around transparency around trip details and as well as the receipts. And then there's also a weekly earnings summary as well. That also, again, the TNCs all agreed to. For deactivation, there's clear language around what that would look like and having the TNCs, for example, provide a written policy explaining the reasons and procedures available. That's available in multiple languages. So at the point right now, before this bill, drivers can get deactivated for no reason. We've heard stories from drivers, for example, where they've gotten shot or beaten or harmed by a rider, and then they go to the hospital, and even though they're the victim, they're the ones that got deactivated. So now what we're saying is there has to be clear written policies and procedures around deactivations and why they're being deactivated. Again, that has been agreed to. The enforcement piece, Section 6, again, that provisions have been agreed to, and we had some, I think, amendments within judiciary that the TNCs provided. And going through. So basically, there's outside of the minimum compensation rates, there's been a lot of work to get the stakeholder agreement among the drivers, the TNCs, as well as the both House and Senate authors and leadership. Now, before each committee, starting in the beginning of this year, we formed a working group, as I just mentioned, among the House authors, Senate authors, House and Senate leadership, the Commissioner of Labor, and Commissioner of Commerce, working in partnership with both the TNCs and drivers, hashing out the differences that were seen on the original bill. So now the original bill is, compared to the bill that's in front of you, is much different as a result of all the work that has been put by the working group. Before each committee, we had multiple back and forths with the TNCs to make sure that the language was good with them and good with the drivers. That's how we got out of commerce, that's how we got it out of labor, that's how we got it out of judiciary, and now we're here in front of you guys today. So I know I rambled a bit, I apologize.
No, you're fine.
It's a good quick one. Yes.
Very good. Mr. Chair, I see Mr. Carlson here. I was wondering if I could ask a few questions of the TNCs.
I'd rather be related to the finance of the bill rather than getting into a broader conversation of the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think it does have to do with the finances of the bill, and that a lot of the assumptions that are in the fiscal note would be impacted by some of the questions that I have for Mr. Carlson, and we've already set that precedent.
Go ahead. We'll try and keep it brief, however. Great. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Check the time. Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm sure it's still morning. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of Uber Technologies, happy to answer questions. We did go through the fiscal note, and I want to add something. If you don't ask me it, I will bring it up on my own, but I'll answer your questions first.
Go ahead, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, a number of issues that seem to have an impact on the fiscal note around transparency, around deactivation. If I caught the author, there was some agreement on that. Is that correct,
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair and members, as it relates to pay transparency and deactivations, not only do we have agreement on that from the task force that worked on these issues through the summer, And they came up with 24 recommendations, that being two of them. We have already implemented them. They're already in existence. We've been doing these for months. And so that transparency that's in the bill, we have right now. And we have complaints maybe about what that rate of compensation is, but they're getting the information. They know on every ride before they accept the ride what their compensation is going to be. And so I don't think we're going to have a lot of complaints about that process. It's been in place for some time, and we as a company haven't received complaints about the process itself. I will tell you that one of the things that we were enthusiastic about in the bill, which was amended in the Judiciary Committee on 14.26, is that we are giving the commissioner the exclusive authority to be the enforcement agent for these chapters. That was a very important change. And so I think that, you know, they are going to have obligations, and we just hope that they're very limited. And then if you want, Mr. Chair, I can shed a little light on the Human Rights Department if you want. If you look on page 15 of the bill, on 15.8, an important clarification was added to the bill prior to the Human Rights Department preparing their fiscal note. And you'll note on 15.8, they clarified that this discrimination prohibition applies to Section 360.3A.11, which is the public accommodation. We are already a public accommodation, and that's why I think the committee in Judiciary didn't fund that provision. We already are subject to that requirement, and so I don't think we're adding anything new with this language in the bill.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Carlson. That makes sense on the Human Rights Department's piece. Senator Fattah talked about a compromise that didn't include the TNCs. Can you maybe give me a sense of your work on the task force and your work in helping to find a compromise?
Very briefly, Mr. Carlson, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members, Uber and Lyft provided full data on over 18 million rides that were conducted in Minnesota across the state in calendar year 2022. And that was part of the governor's executive order that they do a rate study, and they did that. That study that the department came forward with is the most comprehensive study of TNC driver compensation in the history of this business. It came up with a range of recommendations. What is in this bill is outside of that significantly, and we think the report was skewed a little bit, more than a little bit, in favor of the expenses on the driver's side. And so the rates in this bill are 44% higher than what the base rate in the state compensation study is, and it would not allow us to operate. That rate is in addition to the costs that are in this bill. The insurance that Senator Fattah mentioned in this bill is exceedingly expensive. It's an eight-figure number for riders to pay. We've agreed to those, and we think there should be protections. They're already protected on the automobile accident side of the equation now, but these are new costs in this bill that are also going to be passed on to riders. So this is the bill as is before you is economically not viable in the state of Minnesota for our company.
Senator Pratt, let's stick to the fiscal note here, please.
Thank you, Mr.
Rather not get somebody, Senator Fattah, bringing in so on and having an open debate of how it came to this and where it stands now. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Marty. So, Mr. Carlson, Uber and Lyft have made statements that they would leave the state if these rates were implemented. And maybe this is a better question for the commissioner, but wouldn't it make sense then that we would see no complaints because you would be out of the state and it would have a significant impact on the fiscal notes reduction? Because if you're not operating, there can't be complaints. Is that a fairly reasonable that you'll be pulling out of the state?
Senator Fateh.
Mr. Carlson, respond first.
Mr. Carlson first, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, that's a logical extension of the conversation we're having, but I want to make sure you know we're not leaving the state over the fiscal note to get to Senator Marty's question.
Senator Fateh.
And also, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt. This is not just a bill regulating Uber and Lyft. This is a bill regulating TNCs, regardless of who they are.
Further discussion? If not,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Well, just a discussion, and I won't ask Mr. Carlson any more questions, but you know, I guess I am very concerned with where we're at. We had a task force come together with all stakeholders who came up with recommendations. We had the legislative leadership, the Democratic Socialists, and the Minneapolis City Council get together and come up with a compromise that didn't include some of the key stakeholders. This feels like a fake deal to me, and I'm just really concerned that, you know, so often we bring amendments, we have discussions, and we say, well, we can't accept that because we don't know where the stakeholders are. Well, here we know where the stakeholders are, and we've excluded them from those discussions and decisions. And unfortunately, the action that the Minneapolis City Council took originally affected my area, but not statewide, in that the rideshare providers were going to pull out of the metro area, which affects Scott County. Now, if we pass this statewide bill, it's going to have a profound effect statewide. And I don't know that, you know, as Mr. Carlson said, they're providing 18 million rides a year. You know, that's over 300,000 rides a week, if my math is right. And we've, you know, lost a number of taxi licenses. I think we're down to about a tenth of where we were just 10 years ago. We don't have any new TNCs to jump in. I'm afraid this is going to have a dramatic effect on our economic viability. It's going to be harder for us to attract some of the events like the Super Bowl, the All-Star Games, and any other big events that we've done so well and we're working so hard to attract and get here. I don't think we'd be having as much controversy had we followed the task force recommendation. You know, we talk about how, you know, this is a lot like Washington. Well, while Washington is paying a slightly higher per mile rate, they're charging a much lower per minute rate. And it just seems to me that we're taking these independent contractors who set their own hours and use their own vehicles, and we're trying to make them employees. And we are completely going against, you know, what we've done for a very, very long time in labor policy to establish when somebody is an independent contractor and quote unquote self-employed. I've seen drivers with both Uber and Lyft and other stickers, so they're able to switch back and forth depending on, you know, who's offering the best pay for a ride. Trying to make them employees of one of the TNCs seems to be counterproductive to the interest of the drivers. So, Mr. Chair, I'll be voting no on this bill. I think this is the wrong approach. I think it's a fake compromise that was come up with when one of the key stakeholders wasn't included. Maybe on Twitter we'll see hashtag fake deal. I don't know. But I would encourage members to vote against this. This is going to have a profound impact on so many Minnesotans that rely on this service. Not just, you know, this isn't just for after bar time. This is, as we've seen, people with disabilities people who have a hard time getting around or who have a vehicle under repair need this service to get to work, or maybe need this service to get to work when their work hours don't align with the transit schedule. And so for that and many other reasons, Mr. Chair, I think we ought to reject this proposal and send them back to get a real deal.
Senator Friends.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, thank you, Senator Fatte. The first time you had this bill heard in Commerce, I said you are the right person to be bringing this forward. And I'll be a yes vote on the bill today, Mr. Chair. I share the same concerns about cost. It'll have to be an agreement that includes all the stakeholders to get across the finish line. But I believe that the better move here, given all the considerations, is to leave room for those negotiations to continue. And it's not so much a question of where we've been. It's a question of where we're going. We need to get a deal, and we'll have to have everybody to make that deal. And I think we are more likely to get a deal where all stakeholders buy in and announce there's an agreement if we pass this out of finance today than we are if we vote it down. And with that, I'll be a yes vote today and wish you good luck in negotiations going forward. And thank you, Mr. Carlson, for your testimony. I mean to be signaling. I think it has to have the support of Uber and Lyft and the drivers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames and Senator Muhammad.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have some questions for Mr. Carlson. From the insurance standpoint, currently the vehicle owners, they put on their own insurance, is that correct?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, that's an obligation on the TNC driver to carry their own automobile insurance as well as the TNC's.
And would that be the same on this bill?
It.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, it is the same as it relates to your automobile insurance. The new insurance that is in this bill, which is to provide supplemental coverage if there's an injury beyond your auto policy or outside of, you know, an injury that happens right when you're dropping someone off, that is all at the cost and expense of the TNC. That's section one of this bill. And we have agreed to provide that. It's expensive, about 5 cents a mile, but we've agreed to provide that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead,
Mr. Carlson. Would they be eligible for workers' compensation?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames, they are currently classified as independent contractors, and we want that to remain the same, and they are not eligible for employer-paid workers' compensation. This is not a direct workers' compensation policy that we've put into this bill, but it does provide some supplemental benefits if there is a more significant injury than what the auto policy covers.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Muhammad and Senator Westrom.
Thank you, Chair Marty, and thank you, Senator Fatte, for bringing the bill. I just wanted to sort of take a moment and sort of reflect about the past year and how this bill has been moving forward. I think there's been a lot of conversations between the city, our leaders, the authors, the drivers, the Uber and Lyft, the companies. And I think often in this committee, this similar conversation happened when we were talking about Senator Murphy's warehouse bill when it came to protecting those employees. This is a different scenario and a different case. But I think it's important to remember that Uber and Lyft would not exist without the drivers. They are the reason why it is a... almost, if not, probably a $1 billion company, if not more. And these folks, their demands are clear. They want better wages. They want to be protected in what they consider their workplace. And I think that's the obligation of Uber and Lyft. I hope that we have some deal as this bill moves through the process, but I think people across the board are working hard. I hope that people keep an open mind. But I want to thank the drivers, because I think it takes so much work and effort to consistently show up when you've been told no, and to show up time and time again and organize against, you know, your own workplace. And so I hope that we have a deal at some point. But at the very minimum, I want everybody in this committee to keep in mind that Uber and Lyft would not exist without the folks here today who do the work that without the work that they do. And so thank you for the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fauté, members, I would urge a no vote. I think this needs a lot more work. And I'm still puzzled why we would be meddling in something that is really a dynamic option that didn't exist 15 or even 10 years ago. And if it doesn't work for some people, there's so many jobs out there, and the opportunity to change and do something else is unlike we've never seen in history. And so why we're meddling with this and threatening the situation or the Lyft and Uber and the transport TNCs to leave the Twin Cities or Minneapolis-St. Paul at a minimum, and all the riders and those with disabilities that will have to find a new way to get around that didn't exist 20 years ago. I just think you got to think about that. And I would just urge us to not be passing this out in hopes that we can come up with a deal. Let's get a deal if there's a deal to be made, but otherwise, let's leave well enough alone so at least those that do depend on this and do have a system that they have come to rely on can find a way to transport that works for them that not that many years ago wasn't even an option for somebody with a disability. And so, Senator Fauté, I hope you'll take that to heart and really think long and hard more about what's going on here, because there's a lot of people's lives that are going to be disrupted with the efforts that have been going on for the last 12 months to make such demands that aren't reasonable. And if it's not a good fit, there's so many jobs out there that people can shift to. Maybe it isn't a fit for some people, but it sure is for a lot of people. And they like the flexibility, they like the freedom, they like the ability to shut off early on a Friday, or not come in till late on Monday, or only work weekends because they have another job. And so I find it hard why we're spending time on something that has been a benefit for so many people in the Twin Cities and hopefully across the state more as this option is adopted by more and more of people that could use it. And rather, we're going to just cause it to leave or disrupt it so much that people won't have that option, and I think that's wrong.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say, first, I'm grateful that this bill is here, and I want to thank Senator Fauté, the commissioner from DLI, the drivers, and Uber and Lyft, and everyone else who has been involved in the construction of the language. This has moved from where we were last session through the course of this last year. And it has been, and I've been watching and participating as I can with Senator Fauté, very important work to bring us to this place. And perhaps because we're in the Finance Committee now and just looking at the fiscal note, not abundantly clear the amount of work that people have done in the last year to bring us to this moment. And I do think it is important that we recognize that in this is a question about the drivers and their livelihoods. That's important because rideshare won't work that well if there aren't workers and workers in Minnesota should, you know, be paid at least the minimum wage. And so I hear the comments from others, but I do want to give voice to the work that I have observed over the course of the session and more that has brought us to this point. It's really important work, important for the drivers, important for people who relied on rideshare. And I have good confidence that we're going to complete the session with a statewide framework. And I really want to thank you, Senator Fateh, for that work.
Thank you, Senator Dames and Senator Pratt, and closing comments from Senator Fateh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a concern here. When we usually hear that there's a deal been made, it means that all the stakeholders have been part of that deal. And that's certainly not the case here. It appears to me this bill is moving forward to see if we can get Uber and Lyft to blink. Just want to tell you something, folks. Think about what's going to happen if they don't blink. And think about who maybe better start blinking. Because if we lose Uber and Lyft in the state of Minnesota, not only Minneapolis, but all the metro area and rural Minnesota is going to have a problem. And that problem will have been caused by the fact that we run around and say we got a deal when we didn't include all the stakeholders. So folks, in my opinion, it's time that you get a deal and then announce you have a deal and not try to play the game and see who's going to blink first, because we might be losers there. And if they don't blink, you folks out here that are drivers, and thank you very much for what you do, you may not have a job, and you may be forced to go someplace else to find a job. So let's be a little cautious about how we play this game of chicken and who's going to blink first. And I will be voting against the bill for that reason.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. You know, Senator Dames is right. This wasn't a real deal because it didn't include all stakeholders. We set up a task force last year that included all stakeholders, and we adopted 24 consensus items, but some of the big ones we've ignored. And I agree with Senator Muhammad. Uber and Lyft would not be, or any of the TNCs, would not be as successful as they are without their drivers. But their drivers wouldn't be working for these companies if it weren't for the overall organization. You know, I've always said that you can't be pro-worker and anti-employer. It's a symbiotic relationship. Each one relies on the other. And Senator Frentz, I think if we were to table this bill, and if you made a motion to table the bill, I'd support it, because I think it needs that stress of being in the Finance Committee to get it over the finish line and make sure that we keep this. And one of the things I would really like to see be part of this bill is preemption, because we can come to an agreement that maybe keeps the TNCs in place, but if Minneapolis again decides to expand this beyond what state law is, those of us in the suburban counties are going to lose our service as well. And so we shouldn't have the Minneapolis City Council dictating transportation policy for the seven-county metro area. This is a fake deal, and I encourage members to vote no. And Senator Frentz, I'll be listening for that motion to table.
Senator Muhammad, quickly before Senator Fateh.
Thank you. I just had a quick question for Mr. Carlson, I think. Under the deal that is in front of us right now by our leaders and the authors, will Uber still make profit?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, regrettably, Uber and Lyft is here, and I'll let them speak for themselves, but Uber as a company has made a decision that they cannot operate under the rates that are in the deal that was reached. So it's not a question of making a profit. They won't operate here. But I want you to know that Uber and Lyft are committed to finding a solution. We have been working on this for 18 months. But we need to have a deal that works for riders and drivers, of which our labor base is expanding. According to the Dolly wage report, we increased the number of drivers in 2023 by over 25%. We have people that want to do this work, but we need to make sure that it's at a rate that riders can afford and drivers can be compensated. And we're committed to it. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, but that doesn't answer my question, which is, will Uber make profit under the deal that's been introduced in front of us, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I guess I can restate it. It's a false analogy because they won't operate in Minnesota under these rates. And they have tried this at a rate that they knew was unaffordable in Seattle. And right now, the ridership in Seattle, which has almost double the household income in Seattle compared to Minneapolis, rides are only 50% of what they were pre-pandemic because people can't afford to do it. We do not want to make that mistake here.
I appreciate that. Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I don't think I'll get the answer. I guess we won't know, considering the threats that Uber has made. I think I'm glad that Senator Pratt and I share that that these companies would not be able to exist without the drivers, and it's true that they wouldn't have the work that they do without these companies. It's also important to name that before we had Uber and Lyft, we did have blue and white taxis in Minneapolis and taxi companies that were operating, and now they no longer exist because Uber has monopolized the market. And so, you know, I share a lot of the concerns that we do. I could not disagree with Senator Pratt more in terms of preempting the city of Minneapolis. I think my friends across the aisle love to talk about local control until it comes to Minneapolis, which is really unfortunate. I think we should allow cities to do what they need to do. And I just wanted to take a moment to also thank our leader for working really hard with the companies, and hope that you guys can continue to stay at the table. We can get to something. And I appreciate you for letting me speak again.
Senator Fateh, closing comments.
Yes. First, I want to say thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. This bill is a result of a lot of hard work by all the stakeholders, including the TNCs, including the drivers, including the administration and the authors of this bill, and leadership in both the House and Senate. I want to clear a few things up really quick, briefly. Number one, in terms of the rates. Time and time again, we've hearing from folks that Uber and Lyft were not consulted in the compromise. They were consulted. We led them. We updated them every step of the way. We negotiated with them. Me meaning the working group, and it went nowhere. What we know is that in the DLI report, we saw that. For the base rate, it would be 89 cents, but a comprehensive rate would be $1.21, meaning expenses, benefits, XYZ, everything else. And the Seven County Metro, $1.39 in Greater Minnesota. Now, the city of Minneapolis, as much as we like to talk about how much craziness they've been doing, was in their own report, tailored to them, it was $1.23 and $1.42. So their initial first wage that they put out, $1.40, was not even at the max of their own report. Now, we're talking about the city of Minneapolis. They're the ones that agreed to go down to $1.27 before the TNCs even budged. So now we're at a position where the drivers right now make about 61 cents a mile, I believe, something around there. And we had the TNCs coming to them saying, okay, we have the city of Minneapolis off the table right now. They're willing to negotiate. What can we do? We have drivers literally saying to us, they can't afford rent. They're making less money than they made 10 years ago. They have to fill up on gas multiple times a week. They can't afford putting food on the table for their families. What can we do? Uber and Lyft came back and said, basically, 68 cents is what we can do. So hearing that from the drivers, hearing how much hardship they're going through, they came back and said, you know what? Best we can do is 7 cents. That's absurd. That doesn't make sense. So as much as we're saying the city of Minneapolis is being hard-headed and DSA run and all that stuff, they're the ones that came down. They're the ones that were operating, negotiating in good faith. That's number one. Number two, I appreciate Senator Mohammed asking the question about the profitability, because this is a question that has been dodged time and time again. First, you heard Mr. Carlson saying that they cannot operate under that, not answering about the profitability. Then Senator Mohammed, you just saw right now, pressed again, and he said, well, it's false because we will not operate. The reality is, in other areas where the wages are higher, in which Seattle, for example, $1.55 and 64 cents, I believe, much higher, they're still there and they're still profiting. And again, I appreciate both Senator Mohammed and Senator Pratt saying that this wouldn't be possible without the drivers. So yeah, I'm in full agreement with the Mohammed-Pratt sub-caucus that this should be about the drivers. I wanted to also state that how we got here. How did the Uber and Lyft monopolize the market? Uber came here a little over a decade ago, and without any oversight, without any permits in Minneapolis, and pushed out all the taxi cabs. Operating, and this is not my words, this is the words of the city council members at the time, operating illegally. So these are folks that were making a livable wage as taxi drivers, being able to put food on the table, make a livable wage, pay for their gas, pay for rent and all that. And then Uber came and Lyft and bulldozed the market illegally. And that's the words of the city council members at the time, not the DSA, like you like to say, council members, the council members 12 years ago. So that's how it happened. So their interest is not in the drivers, and their interest is not even in the disability community, as we heard earlier. Their interest is their profits. I'm more than happy to continue the conversations with them. I'm proud to have support from the drivers, the SEIU, for example. The Minnesota Council on Disabilities came and testified in labor on the wheelchair accessibility piece, so they were in support. So this bill went through a lot of work, a lot of vetting, and it's a much, much different bill that it was last year as a result of that work. And the compromise, even though the TNCs are not happy, the compromise came as a result of speaking to all members, all stakeholders, and whether or not the TNCs agreed is one thing, but they were consulted with. They were not left out in the dark, as people like to say. And I hope to earn the support of this committee and pass it through. And even before we get to the floor, I'm happy to talk to you, Senator Pratt, Senator Dames, anyone else, and continue these conversations. Thank you.
Senator Mohammed moves at Senate Fowles.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator.
Parliamentary inquiry. Has there been a roll call requested on this?
You are requesting one right now. I'll take it.
I'll let Senator Pratt decide, but I want to make sure there was one.
Senator Mohammed moves that Senate File 4780 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, Senator Pratt, did you want a roll call?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Let's take a roll call.
Okay, with that, those online, please turn on cameras for voting, and staff will take the roll.
Senator Marty.
Aye.
Senator Friends.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Dames.
No.
Senator Dreheim.
No.
Senator Eichhorn?
No.
Senator Mohammed?
Yes.
Senator Murphy?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Westrum?
No.
Senator Wicklund?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Fateh. Members, at some point later this week, we hope to have a bonding bill. We hope to have a bonding bill in front of us. We'll be in touch with members on scheduling that meeting, but we hope to stick to our normal 8:30 to 10:30 time slot, if that's possible. With that, no further business. This committee is adjourned. Thank you.